Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast with James Rapine and Daryl Ryder on 92.3thefan.com.
What up and welcome into another edition of the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. I'm James Rapine. He is Daryl Ryder. We are your beat writers for 92.3thefan, 92.3thefan.com with you for another edition of the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. We're going to get to all three major professional sports teams on today's show. Let's start, in Cleveland at least. Let's start with, we will start with the Browns. We also obviously have some Indians to discuss as they missed the playoffs for the first time since 2015. And we're going to get to some Cavs as well. I got a chance to catch up with Lindsey Gottlieb. You'll hear that one-on-one interview at the end of the podcast as well. A quick reminder to subscribe iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, including the radio.com app. We do this every single week. And be sure to leave us a five-star review so more Cleveland sports fans can find this podcast. All right, Daryl, let's dive into the Browns. Because you predicted it on the website. I sat in this very room last week and predicted it. And they came up with a huge, huge win. You were in Baltimore. You had the coverage at 92.3thefan.com. What's one or two things that maybe have flown under the radar about that win? We know about Nick Chubb. We know that Baker's numbers were really good. We know about that defense. One or two things that maybe have flown under the radar about that win and its significance in Baltimore.
Well, they don't do it very often.
That's fair.
They don't.
I don't think that's under the radar either. Yeah. But yeah, it was a big win for sure.
Yeah, last one was 2015. You know what? I think it's one of the bigger wins in the expansion era in the last 21 years of this franchise, because that's the first time they just kicked the crap out of the Ravens. Like, they have never beaten the tar out of the Ravens like they did Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe that doesn't really fly under the radar. Not much about Sunday flew under the radar. Jermaine Whitehead was sensational, forcing three turnovers. Mm-hmm. The defense was outstanding. I did find it interesting after the game, Sheldon Richardson, when I was talking to him about holding the Ravens in check, and especially Lamar Jackson, he said, hey, man, this is a defensive team. We are a defensive team. For all the talk about being an offensive juggernaut, mm-hmm. that's our identity. And I found that to be a little bit interesting. But, I mean, that was a thorough beatdown, and it's not something we're used to seeing. And I like that every time the Ravens try to answer and make a game of it, the Browns responded
mm-hmm.
in the second half. 30 points in the second half. Obviously, Nick Chubb, dude got a speeding ticket on the 88-yard touchdown
in the
running
school
near.
Zone, he did.
Yeah, 22 miles an hour, man. Woo! That is some wheels. But we knew he was fast. He ran track in high school. That's where he gets it from. Because he was accelerating. That's the thing. Like, most guys on long touchdown runs, usually, like, midway through the run, they slow up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You know, and they just maintain.
Or because they're getting tired.
Mm-hmm.
Not Chubb, man. He was accelerating, which you don't see. So, great, great win. Now let's see what they can do going to San Francisco. They're atop the division. I wrote it down here. How many days passed? It's like 1,700 days, something like that, passed since the Browns were in first place. 1,731 days passed.
It was 2014, right?
Since the Browns were in first place. Yep, November of 2014, they went to Atlanta. They beat the Falcons. And then, yeah, their record in between.
Oh, boy. Go ahead.
12 wins, 59 losses.
Oh, my God.
And a tie.
How many coaches? Three? One, two, three.
I didn't tabulate that.
I think it's
that.
Three. I think it's three. I might be wrong.
I was told there would be no math this morning.
It's either three or four. Yeah, all right. So let me give you a couple things here, because to me, we talked about it. I think it was after the loss to Tennessee. And by the way, Sunday's win over Baltimore was a lot like the loss, just in reverse order of week one, where the home team stays in it, and then they just, every time the Browns answered, and every time the Titans answered the Browns in week one, and then they pull away in the fourth quarter, much like the Browns did on Sunday against the Ravens. Some things, obviously you had to get the running game going. It was great to see that.
Yeah.
But the fact that, and we know Jarvis Landry is capable of having big games, and hopefully he'll be able to suit up. I'm not sure how likely it is Monday night with the concussion. Hopefully he'll be able to go. But the
don't
thing,
count on it.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that stood out to me was OBJ, and I get it. You know, he got into it with Marlon Humphrey there briefly, but he kept his calm. Everyone talks about, oh, he's going to lose his mind. Remember, coming into the year, a lot of the talking heads, they're going to lose their minds when they're not getting enough targets, when they're not getting enough Really? Because Odell Beckham Jr. seemed pretty composed. He seemed pretty dialed in. He seemed like he was blocking. He seemed like he was still running routes hard. He seemed like he was doing everything necessary to help his team and draw attention, which freed up Jarvis Landry, which helped Nick Chubb have multiple big runs and helped unleash that offense. Like, to me, that's the key, is having your guys buy in. They've already faced some adversity in the first month of the year. They didn't really shy away from it. If anything, they bonded and came together.
Right.
I think that's a key test in the fact that we saw it. That's the first time where OBJ didn't get targeted much. That's the first time we've seen him here in Cleveland where he didn't get the ball and wasn't the kind of the main cog in the passing game. And the fact that you're able to, one, have success, and two, he kept his head in the game. Not that he's some young player, but I think that's important for this team in it having success over the next 3 months.
He played extremely well, and I talked about it after the game. The way he was blocking downfield, running routes, he was creating opportunities. I mean, the Ravens went into that game basically saying, Odell Beckham Jr. is not going to beat us. He is not going off. We are going to contain him. Mm-hmm. And they did. They were extremely physical with him. Both he and Marlon Humphrey should have been thrown out of that game. Beckham for throwing the punch, Humphrey for trying to choke him out. It's laughable that the Ravens team website put that article and that video out yesterday.
You know what that looked like? It looked like an SB Nation, like, fan site. Like, and I'm not hating on SB Nation, but you know, one of those fan websites.
No, you know
websites?
What it looked like to me? It looked like the Trump administration and Rudy Giuliani took over the Ravens PR department. That's what it looked like to me. There was no choking, even though you obviously see on the video there is choking, but there was no choking. It was a perfect tackle. It was perfect job by Marlon Humphrey. I mean, get the hell out of here with that. First of all, they cut it off, number one. So you didn't see the end of it when the officials and teammates ran in to break it up. Mm-hmm. That's when the real choking occurred. Yes, you could see the right hand had a fistful of jersey taking Odell to the ground. But that left hand, you couldn't tell if it was inside the pads or if it still had the fistful of jersey. Mm-hmm. And pressure's applied to the neck. Now, his hands might not have physically been around the neck. Okay, if you want to argue that, I'll listen to that argument. However, choking is applying pressure to the neck area and trying to restrict someone's airflow.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch the video, he clearly has pressure on the neck area. And so, get out of there with that nonsense. But I'm waiting for them to reveal Ray Lewis's white suit at this point.
Yeah, to me, I'm okay with them not throwing both guys out. I think it's, as long as it doesn't continue, and it didn't from what I saw. It kind of ended there. They kind of both took a deep breath, and that was it. And apparently Marlon Humphrey apologized after the game. But the fact that...
Yeah, why did he apologize?
No, I get it. I don't even want to debate that. He choked him. Like, to me, it's a no-brainer. Like, that happened. I was actually surprised Odell didn't lose his mind. Because, I would have. And I'm surprised that he stayed composed there. So... But to me, I'm glad that they didn't eject him, and OBJ stayed composed, and that's one of the things that people were worried about, I guess, especially outside of Cleveland with acquiring him. And I think so far over the first month, it's been all Nothing but good. Look, he's not going to have 100 plus yards and two touchdowns every game. He doesn't need to. They have all these weapons. But for him to draw attention, for him to be the focal point, doesn't necessarily mean he's going to have the most touches or have the most impact in the box score. And I think we saw that against the Ravens. All right, let's move forward. Let's talk about Monday Night Football. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine. This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. It's Browns in San Francisco against the 49ers. Bright lights Monday night. It's a big matchup. I actually think I have a pretty good feeling about this game, too. San Francisco, they're solid. I like Jimmy Garoppolo more than a lot of people. I think Kyle Shanahan, everyone, Sean McVay gets all the love. I think Kyle Shanahan's right up there with the best offensive minds in the game, and obviously he was here in Cleveland. But I like where the Browns are at. I think you get an extra day for, you know, Antonio Callaway to get back acclimated to the team. Maybe Rashard Higgins can play, which we'll see, but hopefully.
Wouldn't count on it.
I'm just saying, hopefully you get two out of the three with Landry, Higgins, and Callaway. And if so, I like their chances again this week. I know it's going to be a hostile environment. I know the 49ers are much better and Jimmy G is healthy. But I think the Browns are just as talented.
I can't wait to talk to Kyle Shanahan Thursday. I need to know what was in the PowerPoint presentation. I'm sorry. That is like one of the great moments in Cleveland Browns expansion history. His PowerPoint presentation saying, get me the F out of here after the 2014 season. Beyond brilliant. Well, I need to know all about. I mean, there needs to be a book written about that.
Well, he realized I don't want to be tied to Johnny Football.
Oh my God.
What that was. You know, that's what it was. I got to get the hell out. And then he goes to Atlanta.
Oh man.
And that's it.
Those were the days. Oh, those are the good old days of the Cleveland Browns. Yeah. Hey, you know what? When he was here, the Browns were playoff contenders until all hell broke loose and they put
seven
Johnny
and four.
Football. Yeah, they were 7-4. Well, it goes back to the last time the Cleveland Browns were in first place was when Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator here. So it's going to be interesting to see what he has to say about that whole subject. He'll probably just say, that's in the past. I moved on. I'm, you know, focused on beating him, whatever. But he's basically running the same system there that he ran here.
I will say I give the coaching edge to the 49ers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the coaching edge.
And I'm not trying to rip Freddie because I think he did a great job rallying the team in week four.
Well,
I mean, that's a huge spot, a tough spot, and they came out to play from the jump.
I mean, you know, I'm getting text messages.
Yeah.
By the way, Nick Chubb is your AFC Offensive Player of the Week.
Oh, nice. Look at that. Sunday. Breaking news here. It's a Wednesday morning. That just broke.
Of the four games that they played, I would say, and it's only because Freddie just doesn't have the track record as a head coach, I would say in three of the four games they faced a better coach.
That's fair.
Okay.
That's fair. You're saying, yeah, outside of the Jets game?
Outside of the Jets game, that Mike Vrabel, I think, is a better coach.
And honestly, you're going to deal with that next week, Pete Carroll. Then you got the bye. Then Bill Belichick, obviously.
Right.
Not Vic Fangio.
Then things get fun because the Broncos, the Bills, Steelers.
Bills are good.
Dolphins, Steelers, Bengals, Cardinals.
Bills are
good.
That
potentially could be a seven-game
win
streak.
Are good. I'm telling you now. The Bills are good.
I think they're overrated.
I'm telling you now. That's going to be a very tough game.
That
could be just as hard as Pittsburgh.
They played three crap teams in one.
See what they did to Tom Brady?
They did.
All right, my guy, Tom Brady.
They did play a good game against Brady. But I'm looking at that schedule right now, and they have the potential for a 6 or 7-game win streak there in the second half.
No doubt, especially when they get – and that's the thing. People forget. You get Kareem Hunt back. I know Nick Chubb's great, but him and Hunt, you're talking about two of top 10 running backs on the same team.
But San Francisco's got a good defensive line. They use a fullback within their offense. Mm-hmm. Like, they do some things a little different that the Browns haven't seen this year. So this isn't going to be just go to San Francisco, pick up your win, and get your butt home, get ready for Seattle. This is going to be a tough game. And I'm not saying you were saying it was going to be easy, yeah. But This is going to be very, very tough. I hear they're going to travel out Sunday for the Monday nighter.
Sunday?
Yeah. Well, they're on their Monday night schedule, so they practiced. It was more of a walkthrough on Tuesday, more so than it was a practice.
I'm surprised they're not going Saturday.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter much. I mean, but.
Well, I think it helps that it's a Monday night game, yeah. Which it's an 8:15 kick here. It's a 5:15 kick local there.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm doing my time math correctly.
You're right. So, yeah, over these next two before the bye, they're 2-2. They need to be 3-3. So whether you win at San Fran or you beat Seattle at home, and I think Russell Wilson's a top five quarterback. That defense isn't that great, but I think that's
going to
be...
I'm not going to get greedy.
That's going to be an extremely tough game. You need to split these next two.
Split them. Yep.
Why? And here's the other thing, though. Why not... out of the two, I would much rather win on national TV. If you're the Browns, this is the game... Because you beat the Jets, no one really cared because obviously the Jets were depleted and you didn't really look great. If out of these two games, I'd much rather lose the Russell Wilson than Jimmy Garoppolo. I think it's he had, by the way, weird stat that I heard. His last 8 road starts, Russell Wilson, 100-plus quarterback rating. So beat Jimmy G in prime time. I think it's certainly doable. But it's going to be a tough game. You're absolutely right. I think Nick Bosa already off to a pretty good start in his career. DeForest Buckner, that defensive line. And like I said, we talked about Kyle Shanahan's offense. He's getting a running back this week in Tevin Coleman, who they signed in the offseason for a reason to use a lot. So I'm sure we'll see multiple running backs on Monday night.
Well, and, you know, just like we said with the Rams game, it was better for the Browns to lose to the Rams and beat the Ravens from just a standing standpoint. But here's where they are, you know, a month into the season. And I told you this going in. They lost the game we thought they shouldn't lose, week one. And they won a game that we didn't think that they would win, Week 4 at Baltimore. They're actually in a better position, though, because of that.
Mm-hmm.
They are better positioned. They're right where I thought they would be. They're where they expected them to be, and that is 2-2. And if they can get through these next 4 games, 2-2, and be 4-4, they're set up for their second-half playoff run because the schedule gets a lot easier for them. But
and the thing is, outside of at New England, all three are winnable. I'm not saying easy.
Right.
But San Francisco on the road, Seattle at home, at Denver.
Here's what we learned in the last 2 weeks.
You're going to lose to New England. I'll just go ahead and book that one. Yeah. It's going to be extremely hard to win that game.
This is what we learned in these last two games against the Rams and the Ravens. This team is legit. The Cleveland Browns are legit. The talent they have is legit. They can play with anyone. They have the capability to beat anybody. They have the capability to beat the Patriots. That doesn't mean I think that that's actually what's going to happen. But
well, sure. Garrett is in Brady's grill all night and OBJ gets off. Yeah.
They have the capability to beat anyone. That's what we learned. It's one thing to look at the roster and say, hey, here, you know, 10-6, 11-5, they're going to be a playoff team, blah, blah, blah. It's another thing to actually see it. And that's what I saw these last 2 weeks, that they truly do have the ability to beat anybody. They are legitimate. And I know that the haters nationally want to crap all over them just to keep their little bits going. But that's the honest, unbiased truth about this team and what I've learned about it in the last 2 weeks. They absolutely belonged on the field with the Los Angeles Rams. They should have won it with a better coaching down the stretch and better execution. And they just kicked the holy snot out of the Baltimore Ravens, who are the defending division champions.
Yeah,
and many feel are going to repeat as division champions.
As long as they stay out of their own way, I'm with you. They can compete. They can go to Foxborough and compete. I just don't expect that to be a win.
Oh, no.
But you're right. From a talent standpoint, the Browns are up there with anyone. They are. They have their quarterback. They have their running back. They're going to get another running back. They're adding wide receivers this week. Hopefully, they're going to have two out of those three. Like I said, hopefully Landry can pass because that's
such a
game changer. Yeah, it's very high.
I, you know, the concussion protocol is a thing where typically it's very rare for a player who's been placed on the concussion protocol to play the following week.
Usually it's 10 days at least.
So
the extra day gives them a shot, but
they usually miss at least one game. Now, it was interesting last night. We're recording this on a Wednesday morning. Tuesday evening, Landry posted something on Instagram. I'm going to pull it up here real quick. And I don't know if that meant that he was okay or what, but he, if I could get my phone to actually pull
it's all right,
my Instagram, know. That would be most helpful.
You have that janky cell phone plan. I get it. Dangerous Daryl Ryder. I don't want to name any companies because, get me in trouble. But
so he posted a picture of himself, and the caption he put on it was, "See you soon," with the yelling emoji or whatever, and then hashtag dogs got to eat. So I don't know if that means that he's okay and he's going to be back, or if that just means I'll get through this and I'm going to be back when I get through it.
It'll be interesting.
I always appreciate the cryptic posts on social media from players.
No doubt about it. But hopefully,
Demarius Randle, by the way, is the champion on social media.
He did it last week.
Cryptic, yeah, with the little thinking emoji. Yeah. Can you translate that tweet for me, please?
Yeah, we will see what happens. Make sure you follow Daryl on Twitter at RightOrWrongFan for all of the latest Browns news. We got you covered at 923thefan.com. Up next, let's talk Tribe. The Indians' season ended on a whimper. They win 93 games, missed the playoffs for the first time since 2015. We will talk about that next, and Lindsey Gottlieb ahead as well, right here on the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, Daryl, let's dive into this Indian season because it ended on a whimper. They lost five straight. They finished 93-69 on the season.
So it ended the way Indian seasons always end.
Second place in the AL Central. Stop being so damn negative. You know what? Overall,
by the way, am I allowed to officially bury them now?
Yes, you can.
Am I? Am I allowed to do this? They're dead. They're out. They're done.
It was a disappointing season, but when you take into consideration all of the injuries, Carlos Carrasco's diagnosis, the fact that going into the year, the front office was forced to shed salary, shed established veterans. I think when you take all that into consideration, this roster is not only in good shape to have success in 2020, but they had a pretty good 2019 season. Again, it's underwhelming because they didn't make the playoffs. They didn't win the division. We're not talking about October baseball here in Cleveland. But 93 wins. If I would have said Kluber gets hurt and Clevinger misses extended time and Carlos Carrasco gets diagnosed with leukemia and misses over 2 months and the list goes on, and Francisco Lindor and Jason Kipnis miss significant time, and it goes on and on and on. And by the way, Jose Ramirez breaks his hand during your stretch run, and it just goes on and on and on, and I could keep naming injuries. But if I would have said all that at the beginning of the year, you, me, Terry Francona, Chris Antonetti, and everyone in Cleveland would have signed up for 93 wins.
Well,
every single one of us.
Not to toot my own horn, but I'm going to toot my own horn. I did say they would win 93 games this year.
Here we go. I had 88. So that's where my I had them winning the division at 88 games.
I said they were going to win 93. They won 93. And then they lost the last five games.
Yeah. They did that just to prove you right.
I would like to congratulate Indians ownership for once again letting their team down and wasting a year of contention. Good job out of you. And hopefully you... I don't know, play the Powerball or something so you can afford to field a team that can compete. Because this team and the position that they were in, you're 100% right. They overachieved. And their manager, Terry Francona, did probably one of the best managing jobs I've ever seen. Because that wasn't a 93-win team. It really was not.
No, and it's the crazy part, and I know the balls are just, they hit a franchise, set a franchise record for home runs.
Well, everyone but, in baseball set a franchise record for home runs.
But I'm shocked at you know how bad that lineup was for half the year?
Yeah.
Including the final couple weeks of the season.
I think the Columbus Clippers had a better lineup than the Indians put out there every night.
I mean, that's crazy. But it's
called sarcasm.
I
try
know.
It sometime.
Yeah. It's tough. And a lot of people are going to blame ownership. And I think
they should be blamed.
Listen. I think it is fair, especially when you make the comments, and we talked about them, the enjoy him Francisco Lindor comments. When you make that comment, it doesn't go away.
What was the final
the
number
PR
on
staff
the payroll?
For the Indians, the PR staff for the Indians cringed when that happened because they knew that that was not going away. And it's not going to go away. And it's always going to be blamed on owners. And it's always going to be a thing. But most of the moves they made last offseason were the right ones. The Jake Bowers trade you could certainly question, but you get Carlos Santana for Edwin, which I think everyone would take in hindsight. He had a much better season.
Well, Carlos was the team MVP this year.
No doubt about it. So a lot of the moves they made were right. The one that you question is Brantley. If you have Brantley from start to finish,
they're playing
$15-16 million per, then he's here. Then you're right. They're in the playoffs. I there's no doubt in my mind that he's worth that amount of wins when you consider who they were trotting out there every single day, especially early in the year. The Jake Bowers of the world. Think about that. You know? And so when you don't get answers in the outfield until Tyler Naquin starts to emerge and then Yasiel Puig when they trade for him, it'd be nice to have a Michael Brantley. So that's the one offseason move where I blame that on ownership because they kind of forced the front office to part ways with an established player who was an all-star this year, and we saw him here at Progressive Field.
Aside from Brantley's production, I really thought Brantley was the heart and soul of that team. And it, aside from injuries, I think it took them a couple of months to kind of find themselves. But that's on ownership again. Ownership, your job is to provide the resources to compete for championships. No one expects you to keep Francisco Lindor. Everyone understands you can't afford to pay a guy $30 million a year, okay? Nobody's going to break off the cheap-ass Dolans because you don't pay Francisco Lindor.
Nobody?
Well,
they should pay. What are you talking about? You're completely wrong. I'm going to be in the clubhouse later today. They should pay Francisco Lindor this offseason.
Wow.
Period. I'm going to ask Antonetti today. They have to, and be on the lookout for coverage at 92.3thefan.com. This is the offseason to do it. Get it done.
He's not going to take a discount.
I didn't say he should take a discount. I said they should pay him.
Well, I'm just saying that I'm understanding if Francisco Lindor has to go away because Major League Baseball's economic system is effed up. However, what I'm not going to excuse, do we have a final number of how much money they ended up cutting from the payroll from last year? I think it was anywhere between $15 and $25 million.
Yeah, I think, and it's been months since I've written about it. I think it's around 20
and
that they cut.
And I know their attendance was down this year.
Well, it's easy to be down when you cut. So the Q score of the team is not – on opening day, people were like, man, this team's going to suck.
Right.
Like, that's how people felt. And I'm like, in my first year coming in, I'm like, you guys have been great for years. It's going to be okay. And it was, but the perception – the public perception matters, and that's why the Lindor comments and cutting salary. You have to try to change that a little bit. So there are two ways you can do that. Two ways, Daryl.
Sell the team, sign Francisco Lindor.
Okay, three ways.
What's
sell
the
team, sign Francisco Lindor. Right. Third one, and it won't help as much as Lindor. You keep your friend around, Yasiel Puig. If you extend him, keep him, and they're not going to, I'd give it a 2 to 5% chance, partially because I think some team is going to end up giving up big money. But if you can get him on a 1 to 2 year deal, $15 million per, a Brantley type deal, I would. 29 years old, Plenty of baseball left in him. Physically gifted as anyone in the game. That's
the problem is if they do that. If they do that, that's their big offseason move.
Yeah.
But that's not enough to move this thing forward. They need to add to what they have.
Yeah, adding to what they have is having Yasiel Puig here for a full season. Now, do they need to add an infielder still? Sure. Do they need to add some bullpen help?
Here we go. I got the solution. Kipnis comes off the books, correct?
Mm-hmm.
He was making 15.
Mm-hmm.
You give Jason Kipnis his money to Yasiel Puig. You're welcome, Cleveland. Problem solved. There you go. Done.
Yeah, well, Corey Kluber has 17.5. $17.5 million.
I don't
option.
Know that I bring him back.
They are going to exercise that. I'll break that news now. I think it's 100% already done. I think they already view it that way. You're not going to let an asset like that leave. Now, is there a scenario where he pitches well in the first half of next year and they trade him? Yeah, I think that's the most likely scenario, which is a
testament. Or they still try and trade him this offseason. They pick the option up, but they try and deal him
this
offseason.
Yeah, I just don't know if he has any value. Now, if I'm a team, do I try to buy low on him?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Right.
Yeah, I would. So who knows what happens? But, I don't think they just let him walk away for nothing.
How much money do you – I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
No.
But because this is what drives the Indians is it's money, it's revenue, or in their case, the lack of.
I have a budget for next year, if that's what you're
– I'm curious.
If they keep the salary the same, they should have 15 to 20 to spend.
And that includes bringing Yasiel Puig back, or
That includes Kluber.
That includes Kluber,
Adam
but not
Adam
LaBulle Puig.
And I calculated this a couple weeks. That includes assuming they pay Naquin, which it's his first year of arbitration. Obviously, the injury. Who knows if that happens, right? That includes Kipnis coming off the books. That includes Salazar coming off the books. Both are going to happen. So they will have some flexibility there.
Okay.
Now Mike Clevenger eligible for arbitration his first year, he's going to get a huge raise. So there's a couple guys just naturally going to get raises that you're going to have to pay more money to. But yeah, there's some money there. So while I think Puig is unlikely, do they need to explore options of making the team better, and will there be options to make this team better? Absolutely. Even if they keep the salary in the same salary that they had this season, in not 2018, but 2019. So there's a chance here. There's a chance here. Because when you made that Bauer trade, you freed up money.
Right.
And that was key, man. It really was. And so that's why I think they keep Kluber around, part of it.
Okay.
Because you don't want to shed both of them, especially they believe in him. They do. He's in tremendous shape. That setback with the oblique, and it's easy to forget about him. I think they believe in him. I think they'll bring him back.
Okay. Because I think that it, I'm not trying to pick on him, but it was frustrating. Because when you're cutting payroll in a window of contention, you send a very negative message to your clubhouse. And that's why I say this was such an outstanding managerial job by Terry Francona. Because of all the roadblocks that kept getting thrown in front of them. And you went through it earlier in the pod here as we're talking about what is, I believe, a very critical offseason for the Indians. In spite of everything that was thrown in front of them, they persevered until the final week of the season, where I just think they just ran out of gas,
mm-hmm.
Which is the story of the Cleveland Indians franchise. No team runs out of the gas at the end of a season with stuff on the line quite like they do. But
every city feels that way about their team that hasn't won a championship
right.
in a long time.
It's now 71 years.
I'm just saying.
Not that I'm keeping track of these things or anything, but it's been 71 years now. I just would like to see them be aggressive this offseason. Be smart. I understand. Be smart.
Yeah, you don't throw around funny money.
You know,
and they're not going
to
do
but
that.
But I'd like to see the front office get the green light from ownership to be aggressive this offseason. Because I really believe that you got two more years to get it done, and then you have to go into a rebuild mode where you have to rebuild your organization again, and that takes a little time, and you're going to take a step back. I'm not disappointed in this season. I'm not with the product on the field because, again, considering everything that they went through, they exceeded my expectations. They met my win total. I said 93. They won 93. But I didn't expect them to win 93 in the middle of the season when they were going through all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I hope Carlos Carrasco wins the Roberto Clemente Award. I really do. There'd be no better recipient in the game right now than for him to win that award. It's a wonderful story, and hopefully, you know, the treatments he's receiving and everything continues to go well, just for him as a human being. And I think too that that situation helped galvanize that
it brought the clubhouse together, and I think it put their struggles in perspective, because that's really when that came out and they found out about Carrasco. It's kind of when they came together in early June, and kind of when they started to make that run. Let me ask you this, because I would be fine with this. And again, I don't think they're going to re-sign Puig. I think someone's going to come at him with a 4-year, $60 million or 4-year, $70 million offer. And there are plenty of teams out there. It only takes one. But let's say you do sign Puig to, let's say, 2 years, $32 million, right? 2 years, $32 million. Are you cool with a 1-6 lineup-wise going into next year? And let's still have to get an infielder to replace Kipnis, and who knows. But 1-6 of Frankie, Mercado, Santana, assuming you bring him back. I think there is a scenario, by the way, where they sell high on him. He's got 1 year left. He's a big part of that team. But as they continue that retool, I think there's a scenario. I'm not saying it's likely scenario where they trade. I think there's a scenario.
He's the new Michael Brantley.
A scenario where they trade him if the offer is right.
If I have to choose between him and Puig, I'm choosing him.
Well, no doubt. All right, so let's go 1-6 in the order. The lineup, it would be Lindor, Mercado, Santana, and then you put, I would assume, fourth, you'd stick with Puig. That's what they did this year. And then you'd go Ramirez, Reyes. Are you fine with that 1-6? To me, I would love a full season of that. I love 1-6. There's really no weakness, and they're all different. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I can live with that.
I think so. So to me, five of those guys are already under contract. Five of those guys are coming back barring something unforeseen. So you got to find someone who can be Puig. Maybe it's Puig.
Right.
Maybe it's someone else. But if you can find that, we're talking about a pretty damn good lineup in 2020. We're talking about a pitching staff that has two aces in Clevinger and Bieber. Both I expect to be better than they were this year. I expect Clevinger to be healthier, I think that's fair to say, than he was this year, where he missed a bunch of starts and finished 13-4, I believe it was, on the year. I think that there's a scenario where this, and I know you mentioned rebuild, I think this might be the down year. I think 2020, they could be much better. I think the Twins are going to take a step back. I think the White Sox are going to be better in the division. Yeah. So the division's going to be a little bit deeper. But overall, this window, you're right, it's still open. And I think with the right offseason move, whether it's Puig, whether it's someone else in the outfield, and you combine that with an infielder, maybe they splurge on an infielder instead and move Jose to second, or who knows what happens. But they could do something like that, promote Daniel Johnson from AAA, but they got in the Yan Gomes deal, who's very promising young talent. And suddenly you're younger, you're more athletic, and you really have a shot here to contend. So, yeah, I think they need to add to the bullpen, add an infielder, and consider Puig in extending him. But I think that this could be the downside. That doesn't mean that they're going to win more than 93 wins this year, or next year. But if they finish with 90 wins and they're in the playoffs, I think that scenario is pretty likely. So it'll be interesting to see what they say later this afternoon. Make sure you keep it locked on 92.3thefan.com for plenty on the Tribe, not just this week, but all offseason long. Any free agent moves, any rumors, I got you covered. But speaking of coverage, Cavs training camp just started. And, basketball's back, man. I'm excited. I'm excited to transition now. It was like Indians. Next day, I'm at Cleveland Clinic Courts covering John Beilein in his first season with the Cavs. I'm excited. I actually think the Cavs are going to be fun to watch this year. Prove me wrong, Daryl. Explain why they're not going to be fun. I'm excited to watch this team, and I'm not saying good. I think they're going to be fun to watch.
Well, when the coach comes out and says that I'm not judging the success of the year on wins, that tells you it's going to be a long year.
They're young.
I know. I'm not picking on them.
They're banking on 19 and a 20-year-old.
Just saying.
You're older than their two, building blocks. Combined, Think about that. You, not me. I'm
thanks
young.
For that. Appreciate that. Jerk. No, I'm being serious. I mean, they're coming off of a lousy season. They got younger. They hired a college coach.
Love it. I love the Beeline hire. There were people. No, I know you're not.
I'm not
there,
criticizing it. I'm just saying, like, this is. I'm just setting expectation for fans. Like, this is, you know, they are committed to this draft and development plan of theirs, and there's nothing wrong with it. Hopefully, the kids they drafted are able to do what the organization expects and hopes they can. You know, they can play to that level, but. It's going to be a trying year, and just I'm warning people that expect that they're going to win 35, maybe 40 games. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to be in the 25 to 30 range. You're going to see some improvement this year. I'm anxious to see John Beilein's offense with all these young athletic kids. I'm also curious to see how the veterans respond to a teaching coach.
You know, I agree with that
because NBA is a players' league. Guys got egos, and you know, professional basketball players are not the easiest to actually coach and teach. And I'm just kind of curious to see how this manifests itself going forward, and how those. I think Kevin Love's on board. I don't think he's playing nice. I guess is what I'm trying to say there. I think he's on board. He understands. If he can stay healthy, that's what's going to get them to that 25 to 30 win area. But if he gets hurt again, then they're going to be back where they were last year.
I think if he stays healthy, like if you tell me right now Kevin Love plays 75 games in the Cavs, you know.
And it sounds like they're going to do a load management with him this year. If I heard right, that they're not going
I certainly think they're going to consider that, you know, they're not going to play him 40 minutes every night for 80 games. You know, that would be silly.
Right. They're
not
going to do to him what they did to LeBron James back in 2003, 2004, 2005.
You shouldn't with
2006,
Love at this stage
2007, 2008.
I'm tired just thinking about that. But yeah, you're right. So to me, if he plays 70, let's say 75 games, 30 minutes a night, you know, you're not talking 40 minutes.
Right.
30 minutes a night, 75 games. They win more than 30. I think the question here is, does he stay healthy? Because he hasn't. He's not. When's the last time he played 75 games? I'm not even going to look. It seems like it's been a while. So can he do that? And then here's the thing, and here's why win totals with the Cavs are going to be tough. At the deadline, Tristan Thompson, Jordan Clarkson, Matthew Dellavedova, like Brandon Knight, they're going to trade. They have five free agents to be on this roster. All unrestricted.
And every single one of them I would trade.
They should try to get something for all of them. Because none of them, they're not going to extend Jordan Clarkson.
Nope.
They're not going to extend Brandon Knight or Matthew Dellavedova or Tristan Thompson. They're just not. So it'll be interesting to see who's here, who's not. John Henson, another one, who he could flash in this offense and they could get something for him. And obviously he's extremely long and offers something differently than some of the other big men on the team. So to me, the roster's going to have a lot of turnover like it did last year. But I really... Again, I love what they did in the draft. I love Darius Garland. I love that they went big on a 19-year-old who talked to people who have watched him that know bad. I'm not going to pretend like I've watched every second of Darius Garland in high school. I talked to some scouts and people who think that he has a chance to be one of the best players in this past draft. But people here in Cleveland don't feel that way, right? It just there isn't a lot of buzz yet, and I just. Give it time. He's 19 years old. He obviously only played five collegiate games because he had his first major injury ever. But I saw him shoot yesterday, extremely smooth. I love that Colin Sexton came back. Looks ripped compared to last year, and he wasn't in bad shape last year. Looks thicker. Says he watched over 1,000 hours of film trying to get better defensively and playmaking-wise, and I think Beilein could certainly help in that department as well. So I think one, the Cavs, their storylines, unlike last year where by mid-October it was J.R. Smith and you know, Kevin Love's injured and everything went to hell real quick.
I was going
to
say, no, there were plenty of storylines early last year. The problem was it was a cluster F.
Yeah, I mean, it was all done, you know, by December.
Ty Lue fired. We're gonna play the kids. Then we're going to play the veterans. Then we're going to play the kids again. Ty, you're out of here. JR, you can go off and do whatever it is you want to do.
By the way, who's JR playing for right now?
Nobody.
That's what I thought. JR, clown. And I interviewed him. He should have bought in last year. It's costing him an NBA gig. You understand, if he would have been here and been a good soldier.
Well, he's still getting paid, though.
So what? He probably would have gotten dealt at the trade deadline last year. He would have had value, and right. He would have been on a contender. Like, that's why you do not sabotage yourself, and I hate when athletes do it. Anyway, it's a Carmelo Anthony effect. Your perception is bigger than reality.
Absolutely.
Anyways, we're going to get to Lindsay Gottlieb here in just a second, my one-on-one with her. But I'm interested in this Cavs team. I think people will enjoy watching this team much more than they did last year, when it just seemed like it was a team going through the motions, a coach going through the motions, and really just an awkward phase.
Well, you can the reason why is
now they're building something.
Yeah, you can at least you can now see the plan, you can see the vision, you can see the pieces and the parts of what they're trying to accomplish. Do I think that John Beilein's going to be the coach when they return to the playoffs and return to contention? Probably not. His job is to
really
get these kids.
You don't think John Beilein gets to the playoffs with the Cavs?
It's an age thing for me. I don't know that.
Let's bet right now.
Yeah, huh?
Let's bet.
I don't see him coaching this team when he's in his 70s.
Let's bet.
I don't see it.
Okay, let's bet. I'm saying we'll figure out a bet and we'll bet it. How about all of the bobbleheads you have?
No chance.
Daryl Ryder has more bobbleheads. Then I would know what to do with anyway. We'll figure out that bet, though. No, I think he gets him back to the playoffs. It won't be this year. And part of it's because I believe in Darius Garland and Colin Sexton, and I like
that. See,
I
think
direction.
They're 2 years away from returning to the playoffs.
He's going to be here in 2 years. You don't think John Beilein's going to be here in 2 years? I mean, I guess history would say no, but I'm gonna take the over on that,
I have a question for you. Who owns the
team?
Yeah,
I know. You're right. No, you're right. It'll be interesting to see. I certainly hope he is. I certainly hope Lindsay Gottlieb is, as she makes her way into the NBA from a head coach in college to now with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I got a chance to catch up with her earlier this week to talk about Beilein, to talk about Darius Garland, to talk about being a woman in the NBA, and so much more. So here's my one-on-one interview with Lindsay Gottlieb.
We're at Cavs Media Day with Lindsay Gottlieb. Lindsay, let's start. What's the hardest transition been, going from college to obviously the NBA?
Yeah, it's funny I talk about transitions. It's college to the NBA, it's women to men, it's California to Cleveland, and it's also being a head coach to being an assistant. So there's just a lot of different stuff. I don't know that I would use hard to describe any of it. I think the most different thing has been just learning a new rhythm of the season. I'm used to this time of year starting 30 practices before our first game. That's what you get in college. So I think the pace of it will be a little bit different. I think, 82 games instead of 35. But really, it's all just learning a new rhythm and a new schedule, essentially.
Do you think at all about the standard you're setting or the doors you're opening for women across the country in basketball and in the NBA at all?
I think I have to a little bit. The number one thing is I feel a pressure in a good way to be good at my job every single day. Because anytime you're one of only a few, you're representative. And so what I would want is for the people in this organization to say, she does a great job for the Cavs. Number one, to add value to this team and organization, which was what I was brought here to do. And in doing that, that will help open doors for other people. So that is something I think about.
We're talking with Lindsay Gottlieb, and John was described as having more energy now than he had at 47. That's what he said. Is that accurate?
The man is amazing. and it was a big part of why I took the job, right? The Cleveland organization, this moment in time right here with what, you know, we're trying to do as an organization, but also because he's so unique and passionate about the game, and to watch him transition from a college game that he's done for 30, 40 years into now kind of attack this new challenge with great energy, a real open-mindedness. It's been something to see. I've learned something every single day from him, and I'm really grateful to be working alongside him.
How do you, as an entire staff, balance coaching Darius, coaching Colin, and then coaching Kevin Love, who's played on in the NBA Finals, and Tristan Thompson, and really the balance of veterans and stars versus rookies just trying to find their way.
Yeah, it's one of the really cool aspects of the, what we have in front of us. And again, one of the reasons I was drawn here, coaching is about building, right? And it's about building successful teams. It's about, you know, having an organization that clicks well together. And so we're very fortunate to have, you know, guys who are champions, you know, Tristan and Kevin. We have guys who have been in a lot of different experiences and then 19-year-olds. And I think that's why we have a staff that's committed to development and committed to culture building, because we have to put that together with a lot of intention. And I'm looking forward to that. I think it's really a neat opportunity.
Do you think it's going to be a challenge if there is a losing streak, or if there is mistakes that the young guys are going to make at times, for Kevin to stay dialed in as a veteran, or Tristan, et cetera, just to keep them bought into a rebuild at this stage in their career?
Everything that I've seen and felt from them is nothing but positivity, and I actually think there's a chance for them to define their careers in a different kind of way with bringing a team along, right? That's not what they were, you know, Kevin was brought here to do. He was brought here to deliver a championship, which he did, and, you know, helped do that in 2016. And so I think there's a chance for him to, you know, even enhance what his career has been about, to really mesh and bring along, you know, a young team. And there's challenges with every team. You know, teams that you know, have a championship right now mentality have challenges in front of them, and we have a challenge to mesh, you know, this different, very diverse group of guys together. I think everyone's really looking forward to that.
Darius didn't play a ton of college ball, so fans only have a limited amount of tape or things that they can watch on him and facts that they know about him. What's one thing that would surprise us about him that you know or you've seen?
I love that kid. He's very special. I think what people know is the shooting ability. I would say if there's a surprise of what a fluid passer he is. He just has a feel. He has a tempo control that you don't usually see, you know, in such a young guy. I think, you know, people are going to really enjoy watching him play because of the combination of his shooting and passing ability and just the feel he has with the ball in his hands.
All right, so you're new to Cleveland.
Yeah.
I'm semi-new to Cleveland. I got here in December. I'm shocked at all the restaurants, the play scene. I had no idea. Like, I had no idea what I was going to, and I live downtown, so I've gotten to experience a lot of it. What surprised you the most about the city, and have you gotten out and enjoyed it at all this offseason?
Yes, we are blown away by Cleveland. So part of it is, I feel like I've been working really hard since I got here, but in college, you're working 24/7 because of recruiting.
Sure.
So I actually have had some more time to experience the city, because when you leave the facility, you're more done. I'm not calling recruits. So I feel more present with my son, which is cool, and my husband. So yes, we love that University Circle area with all the museums. So we've joined the Botanical Garden, the Natural History Museum, the Children's Museum, the zoo. I think I've been most pleasantly surprised that you get the benefits of an urban environment, the culture, the food, and then you also have outdoorsy things like the parks, and then you have more small town, sports town family feel with the Indians and the Cavs and the Browns and the Monsters. So we've just been blown away by the city. We're very pleasantly surprised. I know winter's coming. I know we have to get some heavy coats. My husband's never lived outside of California, so we'll have to deal with that. But we've really loved our introduction to Cleveland.
Awesome. Well, I hope you continue to love it. Good luck this season.
Thank you very
I appreciate
much.
The time.
Appreciate it.
All right, that's Lindsay Gottlieb. Good stuff from her. Make sure you check out all things Cavs, Browns, Indians on our website at 923thefan.com. Follow us on Twitter at Right or Wrong Fan, at James Erpine, and subscribe iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, theradio.com at 5-star reviews. Help more fans find this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we will be back next week, hopefully talking about a Browns team that is 3-2. Until then, I'm James Erpine. He's Daryl Ryder. Thank you so much for listening to the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.